Really glad to be here and talk about this important topic of health disparities. And I think that we're moving to a topic that's very different than where we just came from. However, I'm wondering if there are some links at times, like perhaps some of the things I'm talking about would act in prevention of gang activity further down the road. So in some ways, as often, there's real overlaps in some of these vulnerable populations and some of the health disparities that we're experiencing. So the topic of my presentation is cultural safety and health for Latino day labor families. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the context of the Latino day labor family's health. I'm going to talk a little bit about cultural safety, what that concept is, and how that then fits into the experience of the day labor family. And I have no disclosures to make. So let's start with a scenario. Gloria, a young Latina mother who works as a day laborer, is worried about her two-month-old baby who is fussy and not feeding well. Gloria knows that fevers in babies can be very dangerous. She takes the baby's temperature. It is 40 degrees Celsius. She is worried about her sick baby and would like to take this baby to the doctor immediately. However, the public hospital is 5 miles away in this urban center. She does not have a car, she would need to take the bus, and the bus does not run at night. So she gives the baby Tylenol, encourages feeding, waits until morning. After a long night of worry at 7 a.m., she calls the public clinic appointment line that her friend gave her. She's put on hold, and at 7:30, when they answer, she is told there are no appointments available today. Two buses and 2 hours later, she arrives at the ED. She waits for 3 hours and is then seen by a young doctor. The doctor does not greet her by name, does not know her family, does not know her baby. The doctor spends less than 3 minutes checking the baby and says, "Your baby's fine, she's not going to die. Go home and give her Tylenol for the fever." Gloria says, "I do not trust the health care. Next time, I would not go." And next time for Gloria came in about 2 weeks when her baby did have a high fever. She did not go to the hospital. Then the baby had a seizure, and she did get care eventually. The baby was diagnosed with meningitis and was seen very late by the hospital system, but did survive. Scenario number two. Enrique, a Latino day laborer, has just finished a long day of work doing landscaping, removing brush and weeds. His arm has become swollen and red and is now quite painful. He thinks it might be a spider bite. As he has no access to insurance or health care, he does what most of the other day laborers report they do, aguantarlo, or endure. 5 days later, the arm is very red and painful. He has a fever, does not feel well, is dizzy and disoriented. His friends at the day labor center take him to the hospital. He gives a false name as he knows he cannot pay for care and is worried about immigration. He is diagnosed with sepsis and shock and spends 2 weeks in ICU until he returns and is able to return home. So in my community, and probably yours, many neighborhoods across the U.S., every morning I see groups of men like this standing on the street corner. They are most likely, or in our neighborhood, they're primarily Latinos from Central America or Mexico, and they are looking for work. While the Latino day laborers are often thought to be mostly single males, about 30 to 40% are here with families. California relies heavily on these laborers in both the urban and the rural areas. They're highly politicized, low-cost workers, and they're seen either as useful, low-cost workers, or illegal immigrants. So multiple factors contribute to the risk of health disparities for the Latino day labor families. Work is often unstable, wages are low, and work is sometimes unsafe. Access to health care is limited, at times unavailable. In previous research, I worked with mothers, parents of day labor families, and did focus groups, community-based participatory research. And we found themes of concern for the health of children relating to difficulty accessing the care, perceptions of poor care, and experiences of fear and chronicity. And these findings, along with some other further community-based research with Latino grandparents and then with male day laborers themselves really gave rise to questions regarding interactions of the health system and the day laborer families. And I thought further about it, the concept of cultural safety really provided me with a lens to look at, critically examine that experience of day labor families in providing for the health of their families. And so that's what I really want to talk about is the concept of cultural safety and how that carries out then in day labor health. Are you familiar? I would like to know how many of you are familiar with the concept of cultural safety? One. It's a concept that has quite a bit of international acclaim and is well known internationally and very infrequently discussed in the U.S., which I think is kind of interesting. The concept originated in New Zealand with Aboriginal nurses. Nurses came forward and said, "We don't feel safe in our education system and in our healthcare system. We are hiding who we are because we're disregarded, we're marginalized, so we don't dare share our true beliefs or our true cultural practices or our true experiences." And so the New Zealand educational system and actually the government heard the nurses and actually instituted a system of cultural safety for the whole country. And so a certain type of awareness and conversation is required in the educational system in New Zealand. Other countries have been engaging with this, particularly Canada and England a lot. This particular article by Brown and Fisk looked at Aboriginal grandmothers in northern Canada. So this is First Nation population. And she talked to many of these grandmothers, and they brought forward similar kinds of thoughts. They talked about hiding their health practices and concerns because they didn't want to be disrespected or seen as uneducated or incompetent parents. So they might not say what they were really feeding their child or how they were really disciplining their child or what they were really doing because they didn't want to be treated as ignorant. They didn't reveal their lay medicine practices. They might not reveal their problems with alcohol or abuse they were experiencing from their husbands because they didn't want to be disrespected and seen as less than. So these concepts really resonated with me. Cultural safety can be defined as those actions which recognize, respect, and nurture the unique cultural identity of vulnerable cultural groups and safely meet their needs, expectations, and rights. We use culture and safety, a culture of safety, in the acute care system to indicate physical safety, right? We're looking at quality assurance kinds of things, and so we talk about quality culture of safety. This is very different. We're not talking about that type of situation. We're also not talking just about cultural practices of saying, oh, these are practices that we should accept. We're looking beyond that. We're really critically looking at the whole system and the experience of the families. So we use cultural different cultural terms in our education and in our health systems. We talk about cultural competence, and we include cultural awareness, recognizing difference, cultural sensitivity, respecting difference, cultural competence, the skills of the practitioner in dealing with that. We talk about cultural humility, recognition of your own cultural limitations. Cultural safety actually goes even beyond that, right? And really seeks to identify some of those inequalities in the system and find ways to provide culturally acceptable and accessible care for everybody. So it identifies some of those cultural risks or unsafe actions which diminish, demean, disempower the cultural identity of an individual. And it really is client-centered, different than cultural competence, for example, which looks at the practitioner. This is focused on the client, what is their experience and their experience, rather than the cultural skills of the nurse. So the question began to arise for me as I was working with Latino day labor families in this community-based participatory research. Are Latino day labor families culturally safe in healthcare in our community? And the findings of my research really indicated a lack of cultural safety. Rather, they were at risk for cultural discrimination, lack of access to health care, and a lot of marginalization. So factors relating to this included a lot of different things, lower educational standards, language differences, and lack of documentation, immigration documentation as well. So the research that I conducted was a community-based participatory research. It was used with Latino day labor parents and then grandparents who do a lot of the care of children in Latino culture, and then the male health promoters who are the ones often really on the streets there looking for work. And the point was, or the objective was, to explore the experience of Latino families in caring for the health of their family members, and then to identify strategies for promoting cultural safety in health care. So we did focus groups and interviews with 64 participants, 30 day labor parents, 20 Latino grandparents, and then 14 day labor men. And we identified strategies, the groups identified strategies of action that they wanted to see completed. So some of the action strategies that were identified and implemented were health promoter training. So a 10-week health promoter training program was developed at the Day Labor Center, and we did some screening events. They identified a need for on-site or locally based health services. We weren't able to get that far, but we're still working on that. They identified a need for mental health care and a lot of increased services. Dental care was identified as a big need. Some things that we commonly do know and see as missing. From the interviews and focus groups, some themes arose regarding the family's experience: cultural dissonance in the healthcare experience, lack of trust in healthcare and healthcare providers, and then these patterns of enduring illness rather than seeking care. Here are some of the things that the participants say. The health promoters really felt rewarded for completing the courses, and they said, "I like to do what I can to help people." Really an attitude of contributing back to their community and feeling empowered by doing the health promoter training. The day laborers, in talking about their health and their interactions with healthcare systems, talked about aguantarlo, we endure. That was a real heavy theme. Not going to go to the doctor. Can't get there anyway. Not going to go. There's no other way. I'll just have to put up with it. And so in screening, we found many, many hidden problems, a lot of extremely high blood pressures and glucoses and all kinds of other issues as well that just were not ever caught. They also said our health is bad because we're exposed to a lot of risk. They were out there in some of the difficult places doing the jobs that no one else wanted to do. Ya no lo acepten, we're not accepted now for health care. During the process of the research with the economic downturn, some of the minimal services that were available in the county were eliminated, and so it actually got even worse for them. And then this interesting comment: we have the same problems, the same needs, the same worries, and if not attended to, we become marginalized. So very aware of how their life was being put to the side. Parents, mothers in particular, had interesting comments. "I have three children, and only one qualifies for insurance." One mother described this idea of her children who were born in the U.S. could get dental care. The others could not. So right within her family, she had a disparity of care. She couldn't get the appropriate care for her children. The service they give in the hospital is not very good. "Our children are growing up like second-class citizens because we cannot give them security." Could this relate to gangs down the road? It's possible. "If my child has a fever or flu, I don't take her to the hospital because it makes me afraid. And then fear is a factor which keeps us as mothers in the house because, at least for me, I am afraid to leave." Grandparents had some interesting comments too. They said, "At the hospital, they charge them a lot, and if their baby has a horrible cough, they say it's nothing, and your baby doesn't have anything, but at home, the baby's sweating, trembling, and has attacks." Those grandmothers know, right? And the hospital obviously didn't. Being Latino, it always becomes difficult for one. Racial, ethnic impact there. The medicine is expensive, and it is very difficult because right now one does not have to work, and it becomes does not have work, and it becomes very difficult, and one becomes ill. So ill from not being able to have medicine, but perhaps also from the stress of it all as well. And then this interesting comment by one grandparent, lack of trust, kind of very concerning. I told my daughter and the people I know to never take their children bleeding to the hospital because they will want to remove them from you like they did from us. There have been many cases like it. This, it is not easy. And she had a horrible story of that kind of context. And so a huge fear of don't go, stay away, lack of trust. No trust at all in the healthcare system. So there was a lot of evidence of risk to cultural safety for day laborer families, right? There's minimal report of trust. And a huge cultural perspective in Latino culture is confianza in your community or in the people you relate to, having faith in your community, trust, really. And personalismo, that you can have a relationship, you can talk personally to the people in your culture, that they will take the time to know you and that they will spend time with you. So these are the cultural gaps that the families really felt when they went to the hospital. They felt minimal evidence of respect from the healthcare providers. For example, they were treated as if they did not have good understanding of Western medicine, and when in fact they did. The young mother had carefully given her baby Tylenol and knew what to do for the fever, knew this could be a concern, but was disregarded when she arrived at the hospital, not really knowing and just being overly worried mother in the circumstance. And the day laborers reported that kind of attitude as well. Variable or minimal access to health care. So there were some private clinics available that people could attend if they paid a little bit, and they should go. That is a good option. But sometimes they didn't have the money. Sometimes they didn't have the trust there as well, and so they didn't really have access to care. Kind of interesting to note that the Affordable Care Act has no provision for this population written in. Zero. So this is not something that's going to be solved with access to healthcare. Although local authorities say if we have help from the Affordable Care Act, then we might have other resources we can free up and actually build our own process. As the city of San Francisco has done, right? There is that access here for everyone, including the undocumented in San Francisco. It's also another risk to cultural safety is the politicization of Latino immigration issues. Huge issue in our country right now, in our state maybe in particular, and these families know that they are right at the heart of it. They hear the news, they see it, and they feel marginalized. They really internalize that fight and know that certain portions of the population would like them to leave fast and think that they're just absorbing services from the community. And then evidence of racialization. People think the day laborer population are alcoholic, non-working, many other kinds of things. And the truth is they work long hours as much as they can. Many live on minimal wage to send money home and support other people. And so these types of racialization characterizations are a problem, too, for cultural safety. So there are some underlying concepts here, really, that we can discuss. One is structural violence in healthcare for Latino day labor families. And the context of the Latino day labor families really is a combination of things. Their current situation, but also preceding this, the economic situation they found themselves in Mexico with the inability to support their family. Now they're a place here. Now the lack of access, they are perceived as they are unable to access social services and marginalized in many ways. And do we have that structural violence in healthcare? Seems to me that the structures are working against the families. We have to talk about agency and resistance if we're going to talk about cultural safety. What can the families do? What about the personal responsibility and how people interact here? And there are many stories of overcoming great difficulty that are very inspiring. It's not all a very difficult, sad picture. There are some inspiring stories of Latino day labor families. At the same time, these barriers really work to limit the agency and limit the power that people have to proceed forward. Power differentials, vulnerability and control. When people arrive at the hospital, they really cannot protest. Too many risks involved in that kind of place if their care is inadequate. They really need to fly under the radar. They need to do whatever it takes to keep peace and stay out of problems. And so there's a huge power differential that is a threat to their safety. And then there's uncertainty, never knowing, not knowing if there'll be work, not knowing if a family member will be deported, not knowing what will happen down the road. And so it's a huge underlying factor that I think has long-term consequences for families and particularly for children. Strategies we can use, day labor health promoters, really great to have these lay peer coaches, the health promoter, male health promoter. There's lots of use of health promoters. Male health promoters are less common. These health promoters are hoping to be able to go out in the streets, actually do screening right in the streets and be that peer-to-peer, male-to-male kind of counselor, really effective and really a great idea. Worksite health services, what if we can have services right there where people are so they can feel safe? Neighborhood housing-based services. What about health navigators that can direct people through the services? Can we talk about cultural safety in education so that people are really saying it's not just about being competent, but it's about critically analyzing the structures and situations out there and bringing social justice really into the conversation of culture in our practices. And medical homes have a lot to offer where you would be known, particularly if they were culturally congruent or culturally safe for family. One day labor grandparent said this: I want the best for the children, all the children, not more for mine, but for all children, that they would be well and safe forever and healthy. And I think really that's what we all want, wherever we might be and whatever our position, this is what we want. And I thought that was very well said. Thank you. That would be